Welcome back, everyone, to the Prepared Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Austin, and we have another great discussion for you guys. Probably one that's more applicable, I think, than most. I'll just be frank with you and say that what we're going to talk about today is probably some stuff that you can take and apply to your everyday life. You can keep it in your back pocket, in the back of your mind, sort of, right? Maybe even use it to address what you carry around in your vehicle during the winter months and things, to make sure that you're in better shape, you're better prepared, right? Your mindset is better prepared as the winter and the cold affect us all differently, depending on where, you know, you live across the country. But before I get into what we're talking about this week, before I introduce this week's guest, you guys, yes, we are a sponsored podcast. The Prepared Mindset is a sponsored podcast. Super, super fortunate to work with an awesome, awesome company in custom night vision, you guys. And their website is customnightvision.com. You guys can go check out everything that they have available at that website. Again, customnightvision.com. And as the winter rolls on, as we're getting into spring, quote unquote, night vision season, this is prime time to use your night vision devices because the nights are longest during the end of fall, winter, and the beginning of spring. Unfortunately, it's prohibitively cold in some parts of the country, but don't let that stop you, you guys. Go check out everything that Custom has to offer now, whether that's a monocular unit or a binocular unit, right? So one or two tubes in green phosphor, white phosphor. And if you don't know, you know, which is better for you, what you're going to be best served with, if you really are going to have a bad time with a single tube device like a PVS-14 or a Tonto, guys, reach out to the team at Custom. You can go to the website. There's a chat function that's built in there. There's also a phone number at the bottom of the page. You can call and talk to them if you're, you know, old school analog and you want to go talk to Kevin, ask him how his day is, or reach out to Trevor or Ben, ask them what your concerns are. They're going to help you. Their goal is to provide the most transparent purchasing process possible. So most people believe that they're going to be at some disadvantage by having a single tube versus a dual tube. And while, yes, two tubes is preferable, you can still do a ton with a PVS-14, and I encourage everybody to take that step. I started with a 14. Almost every friend I have either still has a 14 or a single tube device or started with one tube, and they're absolutely fantastic. All of that and more available at customnightvision.com, whether that's lasers you're looking for from companies like Steiner, companies like Wilcox, B.E. Myers. They carry the entire line of helmets, believe it or not, from Team Wendy. So if you guys are looking for a lid, maybe you had a smoking deal from a buddy or something on a set of tubes, and now you need a helmet. They carry mounts from Wilcox. They carry the Alpha mount from Nocturne Industries. They got the helmets. They have the lights. They have the lasers. Again, you guys, it is customnightvision.com. Head over to the website. Let them know that Austin from Prepared Mindset sent you guys, and they're going to take fantastic care of you. So very fortunate, very proud and happy to work with those guys. They're tremendous supporters of everything that I do here, whether that's here on the podcast that you guys are listening to right now. And by the way, stop and hit the subscribe button. If you aren't subscribed already, subscribe, follow, star, like, 5-star review, all that stuff goes a long way to help with the sustainable growth of the Prepared Mindset. Additionally, the support goes towards our YouTube channel. And as we are, you know, at this moment, pushing towards 5,000 subscribers on the YouTube channel, if you guys can be so inclined, maybe hit pause here, bop on over on your smartphone or your desktop, however you're listening here, to YouTube and find the Prepared Mindset YouTube channel. Same logo. Go ahead and hit that subscribe icon and hit the notification bell because I'm committed to dropping a new video every weekend and we have shorts dropping every single day. In addition to the free content, you guys obviously enjoy YouTube, Instagram, all that good stuff. The support is incredible. And if you guys are looking for another way to support the Prepared Mindset, we have a Patreon page. It's patreon.com/prepared_mindset_pod. If you're looking for access to more content, more information, direct access to the team here for questions and things like that. So all of that aside, like I said, this week we are talking about something that is very applicable to all of us in our everyday life, as winter just will not fucking quit, unfortunately. You know, I blame that little rodent that came out and saw his shadow, was it like 2 Mondays ago or something like that? Punxsutawney Phil or whatever, Pawtucket Phil, I don't know. Anyways, Groundhog's Day, 6 more weeks of winter, total misery here. I know there are people on the East Coast that have it far worse than we do in Michigan right now, but it's been a really harsh winter, you guys. When you look at what the temperatures were like, and I was talking about this with somebody about night vision the other day, And usually over the winters, we try to go out to a buddy's property. We try to get a night shoot in because yes, it gets dark at like 5 o'clock or 5:30. So that way we're able to get out there, shoot for a couple hours, come back in, eat something and then head home. And it's like 9, maybe 10 o'clock at night. We're not standing out there till midnight or something, just so we can get the time under our nods, right? Last year, I think the worst for us was the one range day that we did, or night shoot that we did. It got down to like 19 degrees, and yes, my ghost energy turned into a slushy. But you know, hey, we got it done, right? We had a really good time. As long as you dress for the weather, you're going to be okay. This year, we had days where the high wasn't even 19. We had days where we were dipping into the negatives as our low, and that was without the wind chill. It got to be very concerning. And we talked about this a little bit with the SHOT Show episodes and SHOT Show discussions, was that we actually knew people and met people at SHOT Show who were trying to get on earlier flights home. They were trying to fly out Wednesday night and Thursday morning when there were still 2 full days of the show left to get home, because they had to not only make it home to beat the storm, but they had to prep their properties because they have livestock, or you know, they live in a state where they just don't usually get ice and snow the way that we got during that storm about a month ago now, actually. And it's been a crazy year. You know, we've at least here in Michigan, the last several years been very blessed to have mild winters, and I think that like all of that blessing just saved up and like dumped on us this year. So this week, I am sitting down with Mr. Kevin Estella. You guys have heard him on the podcast here previously. Also, former host of the Fieldcraft Survival Podcast, one of my inspirations and influences when it comes to being a podcast host, who also happens to just be a all-around survival expert, has written several books. We talked about that the last time Kevin was on. But given the weather and everything, I reached out, you know, hey, Kevin, would you be willing to come back on and talk about this specifically? Because I think that with his background and knowledge and insights in the survival space, there's a lot to share. But also, I think, you know, if you live in a cold climate state, I would definitely consider Michigan to be that, right? Because we got some pretty harsh winters and some pretty nice summers. But you start to take a lot of different things for granted. How you dress, things you do with your vehicle, things you do with your home, stuff that you just try not to leave your house without in certain instances because you're just used to it. It's always been this way. You don't know another way of life. Great examples. Like I was raised, you never leave without jumper cables. And it's like, yeah, because your car could die, but especially in the winter, because of how the cold can affect your battery, especially if you're going to a friend's house for a party, stay overnight, the car sits too long out in the cold and you just have, you know, all that cold air blowing into it, that can be a problem. Also with your radiator, things like if you have an older vehicle, right, shoving cardboard in front of that, something just to break that wind so you're not just having all of that just Arctic air blow through the front of your engine bay and causing all kinds of issues and chaos and havoc, right? And there's a bunch of other stuff we could get into, but certainly Kevin is an expert, somebody whose opinion myself and many others really, really respect. So I asked him to come on. He's more than happy to agree. We found some time together to sit down and talk about this, getting into the winter survival piece, because I think while we are used to winters in our respective months, when we do have years like this where it's that outlier year, you know, if you're in like a middle of the country state like Arkansas, Kentucky, or Tennessee, even the Carolinas, right, you're not used to this, and it's very, very different. I've been told by people that live down there, hey, when it gets below 50, it's no fun for us to shoot. I was like, dude, I would do disgusting things to have 50 degree weather to go shoot in. We have to draw that line at like 26, 24 degrees, because otherwise we would lose almost half of the year and not go out to the range. We can't do it up here in Michigan. So when we're talking about this stuff, we're gonna get into a whole bunch, honestly, you know, like survival stuff, general clothing, dress, things like that. It's a very deep and nuanced topic when you really get into it. Some of it's common sense things, but I think there's some tips, there's some tricks, there's some depth to it here that I think we're really going to get into, that's going to hopefully be helpful to you guys, because unfortunately, I was hoping by the end of February rolling into March, we would be done. Like, I was hoping that right now we'd be in the mid to low 40s, looking at maybe a couple weeks, we'd be in the 50s, enjoying life. I'd be hitting the range every other weekend, living up life and everything. And that is just not the case. I know when I looked at my phone earlier today, I think it was 19 degrees. I think the high today in general was like 26 where I'm at. So below freezing. I think we're going to dip, not really dip. I think we're going to crest, I think that's the word, right? We're going to crest above the freezing point for a couple days at the end of the week. And then I actually believe over the weekend, we get more snow and we dip below that freezing temperature and everything. So unfortunately, the rodent was correct. We do have six more weeks of winter. And that's why I'm sitting down with Mr. Kevin Estella. We're going to talk all about winter weather survival. Here we go. Kevin, welcome back to the podcast, sir. How are you?
Fantastic. Awesome. Thanks for having me back on. And I'm looking forward to this one, talking about all the cold weather the nation is experiencing right now.
Yeah. It's been, and I know you're from the East Coast. Where are you at? Are you still in Utah area right now?
No. I live in North Carolina.
Okay. So I don't know. And I only ask because I don't know how your winter has been, but this feels like a total kick in the knackers, especially after the last couple of years we had mild winters, hasn't been so bad, even a little bit generous, on the side of Mother Nature. And it's like, hey, all that good favor we got over the last six, whatever winters, nope, we paid for it all this year. I've gotten more snow this year. It's been colder this year. Just completely miserable by comparison. I don't know what it's been like for you.
Well, it was actually pretty interesting. I was teaching at Winter Strong down in Columbia, South Carolina, and that's a weekend event, right? Soranex puts it on, combination of the outdoor industry and strength and conditioning world. And it goes from Thursday until Sunday. Well, I left Saturday morning or Saturday afternoon because we were expecting a lot of snow. And I'm glad I actually left and it wasn't just a fluke. By the time that snowstorm was done on Sunday, I had 6 inches of snow in my backyard in North Carolina. I've talked to neighbors that were like, I've been here for 40 something years. We've never had this much snow. And what's interesting, being from New England, having lived out in Utah, used to driving in the snow, watching people make foolish rookie mistakes with their vehicles driving in snow. I feel bad for them because you don't want to see anyone wreck, but at the same time, it is entertaining where it's like, okay, you are riding my bumper for the longest time. And I just watched you fly by me on the incoming traffic side over a double lane. Cause I want to drive slowly. And now I just saw you, end up in the snowbank. It's wild. So this winter has been it's been one for the books.
Yeah, it's been, and not even just with the snow, with the temperatures, right? The ice, before we were recording, we were talking a little bit just about SHOT Show. And I mentioned that specifically when I did the episode on it. People were just not ready for it. Hey, let's adjust travel plans to get home. The ice, more than anything, especially with livestock and stuff, it's just, it's a lot to deal with for people that I think are not used to it. You know what I mean? For something that happens every year, we get winter every year. It's to a degree, it's surprising that people are still caught off guard in some instances with the things that we experience it every year. It's just in varying degrees, whether that's the home, the vehicles, or, unfortunately you end up hearing about people dying of exposure and stuff like that every year. It's difficult, but it's something, like you said, it's extremely relevant right now. And I was happy to be able to grab some time with you and dig into this because I think it's overlooked, right? We just go sit inside our house and we'll ride it out and everything will be fine until it's not,
Right. And I get it. There are people that need to travel from home. You might have an essential job. If you're a medical care worker or law enforcement or, one of these positions where you have to show up rain, sleet, snow or shine. Right. Mm-hmm. I get it. There are people that need to leave the house. But for the average person, number one, realize you're not going to starve to death. Most people are overweight in this country. I hate to say it, but you have enough calories around your waistline. Even if you didn't eat, you might be uncomfortable, but you are not going to die. So do not risk your life to go out and get a $5 sub from Subway or whatever you decide to eat, and then the other thing is yes, you don't have to go out and get food. And you don't need to risk your life where there might be people that are clearing the streets so you can get back to a normal life. There might be people out responding to, the elderly having slipped and fall. Don't get in the way of people that need to do what they need to do. Now, that being said, if you do need to go in a smart way. Don't do something foolish where people are going to look at you eventually and say, Oh my gosh, that person was a fool for going out without XYZ. So we'll dive into all that. But yeah, I agree with you. This is nothing new. You know, we've done this before, but people always forget and they will make the same mistakes year after year.
Yeah, and it's as you, like you probably know too, like growing up with it, and then when you experience other regions of the world where they don't get snow, they're not used to, you know, the weather. I've had guys, I said this in the intro for the episode, when I was sitting down a couple of years ago with Drew from Dirty Civilian now, fantastic guy. He's like, "Oh yeah, if it's under 50 degrees, man, I'm having a really bad time." I'm like, "Dude, it's under 50 like half of the year here in Michigan. Like I would just never go outside if I lived that way." And I'm not trying to throw shade. I just it's funny what people get used to. You know, even like down in Florida, they tolerate those extreme heat, you know, temperatures and stuff, and then your body gets used to it. So it is funny though when people are like, "Oh my gosh, I under 50, I couldn't." I'm like, "Are you serious?" Because it was like -4 with the wind chill here the other
Right,
day. Like
right.
we just did life because we had to. So with that, I mean, I don't even know. I know you've written a couple books. I think there's you know, a lot of material out there on this. I don't know what the logical starting point is from your perspective. I'm thinking maybe to start with, I don't know, is it clothing? Because that's kind of consistent no matter what you're doing, is if you understand how to dress, you're going to be in the best situation, whether it's walking, driving, whatever else have you.
Yeah, so I always fall back on, you know, the Sioc readiness formula. That's my background is in, you know, I've spent years training in Sioc, and I always give attribution to learning from them. So awareness, preparedness, and willingness, right? So like what should we aware of in the winter? Like what could do us harm? And you know, typically when we think of like our survival priorities, we look at like the rule of threes. We say, hey, the person can live about 3 minutes without oxygenated blood going through their body. So guess what? Carry a tourniquet, have the medicine that you need, that type of thing. 3 hours exposed to the elements without proper clothing, yada, 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 right? We typically start there. But the first thing that we should do is always address protection, right? And always address security. So when we think about it, like what is the major threat to us in the wintertime? And we know it's the cold. But cold can exist in a lot of different ways. And what we're really concerned with is heat loss. So our bodies have to be 98.6 degrees. And there's a few ways that we can lose heat very, very readily in the wintertime. And probably the scariest one for me, but not the most likely one, is immersion. So imagine you're hiking in the backcountry and you fall through a creek and now you're up to your waist, right?
No.
Or chest in water. Well, now you are losing body heat so much faster because you're immersed in water. But we're not always going to be crossing creeks. So what are the ones that are the most likely? Well, guess what? Conduction is very, very fast. And if anyone wants to experiment with this right now, go to your refrigerator in your kitchen, put your hand into your freezer and touch the wall, right? And if you touch the wall, you'll feel the cold conducting through the wall into your hand. You lose body heat very fast that way. Another way we can lose body heat in the wintertime is through convection. So imagine a cool breeze. And if you want to experiment with this one and you have a ceiling fan, go take a shower, put a wet towel around you, and lay on top of your bed and turn that fan on and then watch what happens, right? So conduction and convection are the two major ones, but you've got other ones, right? Our bodies naturally give off heat. That's radiation. We have to keep breathing. That's respiration. You could breathe in cold air and get really cold. And then if we're overexerting ourselves, wearing too many layers, or going too hard, perspiration is yet another way we can lose body heat. So I think the logical thing to do is say, like, okay, yes, we will look at clothing, but let's look at clothing that addresses those heat loss mechanisms. And the best thing that we can do is, number one, avoid overheating, right? So we can dress in layers and we can strip layers if we need to. I think we've all remembered the Christmas story when Ralphie's brother, you know,
Oh
comes out
yeah.
and he's got the suit
I
that he
love that
can't put his
part.
arms down, right?
Yeah.
Great if you're sitting still, right? Great if you're hunting and, you know, you're in a tree stand and you don't have to move, but that's not the same clothing that you want to wear if you're cross-country skiing or if you are, you know, out and about trying to, you know, clear the driveway. And here's another risk that people don't think about. You can easily overexert yourself in the wintertime and your health will kick in, right? There are people that have heart attacks every single year clearing their driveway. And it's the combination of the cold and the exercise. So clothing, it should be clean. It should be dressed in layers. We don't want to overheat, so we want to, you know, stay relatively cool and warm our clothing. And then the other thing is it should be dry. And yet there are people out there all the time that will sweat through their clothing and never change their socks, and they wonder why their feet are cold. It's like, change your
It's me.
socks.
It's me. Every time I go
Yeah.
shovel, I come back in and my shirt is just soaked. I'm like, I feel disgusting. This is awful. I refuse to use a snow blower most of the time, and I'll come in and my whole like yeah. I'm like, every time I need to get a new snow blower is what I need to do. But yeah, that's me every time.
Yeah, and I get it. Like when I lived in Connecticut, I had the same feeling. I'm like, I'm not breaking out the snow thrower if I have to clear 6 inches, right? Like
It's not worth
it's like,
it.
no, it's definitely not, you know? And then your neighbors get ticked off at you know, because you're running the machine at 7 a.m., you know, or whatever it is. Like I'd
Right.
rather just get it done, you know?
Yeah. And that's 100% my mentality. We have a basic machine, so it doesn't have like the plug-in auto start or any of the fancy new stuff. It's just not worth it. And I probably should have this winter. Honestly, there was enough snow. The frequency alone was enough. I probably should have, but and it's crazy because you don't feel it. You don't feel cold until you stop exerting yourself, and then it immediately with I would say within 10 or so minutes it starts to catch up with you as soon as you just get like if your jacket's not zipped up quite as well as it should be or something, just one good gust of air into your person, and then you immediately start to feel like, oh, there's moisture. Now that's starting to get cold way faster. And that's completely separate, right? From like all the other stuff, like temperature, not temperature is one thing, but like the stuff that can happen to your feet when your socks are wet and you don't get
Right.
to change them out. Like that's a problem all its own and not even unique to the winter. But those are additional considerations, right? When we're talking about it.
You know, you just brought up something that jogged something in my memory that's definitely worthwhile mentioning. And this one comes from my hunting buddy, Dave Pandisha, former Army Ranger, former Connecticut State Trooper, all around good dude who loves the cold. Like, I like the cold. Dave loves the cold. And he said, whenever he was in the Rangers, they would always carry two hats, and one hat was a moving hat, one hat was a standing still hat. So when they were patrolling or whatever, they've got one wool watch cap that they put on that they're going to sweat through. When they would stop, they take off that hat, they shove it into their crotch basically, and they put on their dry hat when they're standing still. But then what happens is when they move again, they switch them off. And the whole idea is that, you know, that wet hat, you're warming that wool hat when you're moving, but when you stop, you're going to cool off, and that wool hat, even though it retains some insulation, it's going to zap heat from you. And if you think about it, you guys, if you're planning on traveling to the backcountry, a hat is mission critical equipment. Like, you should carry multiple hats with you the same way you carry multiple socks. You know, it's so common sense, but yet we don't talk about that type of stuff. Like, you wouldn't go into the backcountry with one pair of socks and be like, well, I'm not going to lose these, right? So why are we applying that same logic to our head? You know, you can lose heat from your head, you can lose heat from your feet. Carry two pairs of socks. And you know, my preference for gloves in the wintertime, I like having wool gloves with leather mittens. And I'll move with the leather mittens on. But if I need to take a shot at something, or if I need to work in camp on something, I can take off the leather over mitts, and I have wool gloves that are still keeping my hands warm. But then when I need to go back to warming all my fingers together, they go right back into the mitts.
Yeah, and I get lots of weird looks for stuff like that when I have a kit or a box in the back of my Jeep with extra merino wool socks and undergarments and stuff like just stuff like that for when these things happen. People go, oh, that's ridiculous. Why would why do you have all of that in the back of your vehicle? Are you planning on something? Like, no, I'm not planning on it happening. But I mean, like, I've been out. I mean, hell, I went out disc golfing with my friends, and a disc went into the creek, and then. So did I. I mean, probably should have let it go, but I didn't. And great, now my whole foot and sock and everything is just totally soaked. I'm like, hey, guess what? Extra socks. Like, stuff happens. That's the definition of preparedness is, plays into all of this. And it's sad because a lot of that stuff that you're talking about there can save, I mean, ultimately can end up saving lives. And some of the stuff we were just talking about made me think a minute ago, like the immersion and all these other things. I don't know where you're located at specifically. Where I'm at, in Michigan, Southeast Michigan, we have lakes everywhere and guaranteed multiple times a year on Jefferson, which Jefferson, if you guys have ever seen, like aerial shots of Detroit with the Rensen and stuff and everything, that's the road that goes down along the lake from Detroit through the nice affluent part of Grosse Pointe and stuff. And there's a long stretch between Detroit and the yacht club where there's about, I would say, less than 15 yards between the road and the lake. People will slide off because they don't drive the way they should and they go into the water. And then if you are lucky enough to make it out and climb out, now you're soaked and you need to get help. Is your phone working? All, you know, whatever. This is all stuff that really happens. It's real.
Yeah, and that comes down to like what we were talking about before. Immersion might not always be both possible and probable where I am, but where you go, it might be. And if that's the case, then you need to have a plan. You know, your vehicle goes in. Do you know how to break a window to exit a vehicle that's in the water? Do you have a rescue me tool? And do you know to press it in the corner of the window where the glass is the most fragile, as opposed to the center of the window where it may not splinter or it might even not work at all because, you know, glass can act like a giant rubber band. So you've got to pack to your specific environment. And like we said, clothing is the starting point, right? Carry multiple hats, good footwear. Honestly, people every year they blow out their footwear where they leave it in warm environments, the cement delaminates, and then they're out on a hiking trail and they're like, oh, look, my boot is falling apart. Or they try to warm their feet by the fire, and the fire warms the bottom of the boot, melts the boot. And now you're in the middle of nowhere and you have no protection for your feet. So it's clothing is really the king in the wintertime. I mean, clothing's important all the time, but in the winter, modern clothing is life or death. You can avoid cotton for the most part. But there's a great company up by you, Empire Wool and Canvas, and they make cotton anoraks. And one of the first things people say is like, oh, cotton kills, cotton kills, as a base layer. But when you wear it as an exterior layer, and when the temperatures are not above freezing, any moisture on the outside is going to turn to ice. And cotton actually creates a nice microclimate as an exterior layer for an anorak. So you look at how many people have worked in the extreme cold in Carhartts. Well, that's cotton, right? It's canvas, cotton canvas. But it really comes down to just making smart decisions with your clothing, and that will really be the foundation of addressing that rule of three for shelter. After that becomes water, and people make mistakes in the winter with water as well. Just not drinking enough, saying, you know, it's painful to drink, hurts their throat when they drink. There's all these excuses, but you gotta stay hydrated.
Yeah, actually, and it's funny you say that. I think it was it, I know it was winter a couple of years ago. I was like driving, it was during COVID. I was driving like a buddy's like lunch dinner thing for his birthday. I was actually listening to an old Fieldcraft podcast. I think it was Mike and Kevin, but they were talking about, and it makes sense. I'd never thought about it. People are more likely to dehydrate in the cold climate than they are in most other instances because you don't everyone only everyone associates dehydration with heat. They don't associate it with the actual like properties of, you know, perspiring and you know, when you add all those layers and stuff and you're trying to you are containing all that body heat, the problems that come with managing that. So it makes sense, but it's
Think
not what
about this
people
one.
think of.
And this one comes from the trauma world, right? You talk to any of the medics that are out there, and they'll tell you that a down jacket, if someone gets a gunshot wound or severe bleeding, a down jacket can absorb so much blood where if you do a blood sweep, you may not know the extent of the bleeding because the down has absorbed it like a sponge. Well, the same is true of our perspiration. When we take, like, let's say you have a great gym session and you take off your shirt and you're like, oh my God, feel the weight of this thing, right? It's covered in sweat. Like you could wring it out sometimes. You know, you make a little sweat angel on the rubber mat at the gym, right? But in the wintertime, how many layers do you have on? You don't necessarily feel all the perspiration that's come off your body because it's spread out over the layers as those layers pull it away from your body. So when you take off that down jacket, you may not notice it's got extra perspiration in it. You don't recognize how much you sweat the way that you would in warm weather. And like I said, people don't want to hydrate because they're like, oh, it hurts my throat when I drink cold water. Well, stop drinking cold water. Heat the thing up, right? You carry a fire starter, you have a metal cup, heat that stuff up, or carry a thermos in the winter. And a lot of foreign militaries actually will carry thermoses in their packs because they want to start the day with warm water, continue the day with warm water. And you're able to go further and farther if your body's not trying to convert cold water to something that is more pleasant in your body, right? Bringing that cold water up to 98.6. introduce warm water, and you're not burning calories that you don't need to. You can use those calories later to stay warm when you don't have warm fluids and you're just stuck in your sleeping bag.
Yeah, no, that's a good thought. 'Cause I think one of the things I was going to ask too is from a survival perspective, we talk like vehicle stuff, right? Your car breaks down, middle of a blizzard, you're stuck. Everyone, like I did a video on my YouTube channel, in the middle of the summer, like I was in shorts and like Docksiders or something. Like it was July. Oh, you have no water there. You're going to fucking die. I'm like, oh, okay, maybe, right? I work from home, so like let's not act like I'm always out on the road and whatever. In the winter, you can't keep water in the vehicle because when the vehicle's not in use and it gets super cold, it freezes. And then if that container ruptures, right, then you're really screwed because you have nothing to capture water or, maybe even snow in or something. But so how can we get water in those situations in the winter? Like, is it just straight up, using body? I don't know. I'm assuming like body heat to warm it up if you have a fire starter. But like, how do we go about getting water in the cold climate? Because usually it's all ice and snow.
So if your vehicle is still mechanically sound, and if we're strictly talking about vehicle survival, the first thing I'll say is you can carry water in a metal container as long as you follow the three-quarter rule. So only fill it up three quarters of the way, and when that ice does expand, then what happens is the bottle is structurally sound, right? You can still use it. Now, people will say, "Oh my God, it's still frozen though. What do I do?" Well, you can easily thaw that, with a candle, if you have a candle. I'd recommend, number one, get out of the vehicle because vehicles conduct the cold better than anything around you. So in the summertime, get out of your vehicle. In the wintertime, get out of your vehicle. Build a fire if you can.
Oh,
Now,
really?
if you are, yeah, if you are able to run the engine, and as long as the exhaust is clear, people forget that your engine is a warm compartment. You can take a metal water bottle and put it inside your engine compartment. There's cubbies and nooks everywhere, and you can thaw your water that's frozen in your engine as long as you can access your engine and as long as the exhaust is clear. You can idle a vehicle for hours and hours, I mean, days, and it will not burn through. So, in theory, you can run your engine and, survive a storm that's lasting 12 hours, no problem. I would just recommend clear off your vehicle, clear that exhaust, but run your engine. That is a portable heater, and use that engine compartment to warm food. Right, we used to call it muffler meat. Right, you go on a long road trip, you put your food in an aluminum foil, you put it in the engine compartment, and 30 minutes later, guess what? You have a hot sandwich, from your
That
engine,
sounds
and it's
like
not
a
like you're.
really gnarly name for roadkill.
Right, muffler meat. But I mean, it works. People are like, "Oh, it's gross. There's chemicals and whatnot." It's like, not really. I mean, they're all leaving the vehicle. But that being said, like, I would recommend people do still carry water in their vehicle. But then also, some of the best inventions are like canister stoves, alcohol stoves. I do not recommend using them inside the vehicle, but you can easily walk into the wood line, set that thing up, and come back and check on it in 10 minutes. And even if it's an alcohol stove, it'll warm it up. So yeah, there's no reason why you can't exercise some basic preparedness, and just look at it as, hey, I'm camping in my vehicle. It just happens, my vehicle's stuck and I'm waiting for help. I'm not going to freak out. So keep that calm mind and you should be just fine.
I say that's that in the event that it's a blizzard or something. Probably the more preferable of the solutions, just because I imagine building a shelter and that's probably pretty rough. If you know it's coming in, that's one thing. But and maybe we can get into some of that is because I know there's people that go, backcountry, they go hunting, they go hiking and things like that, and storms roll in, stuff happens. We talked a ton about the clothing piece of it. How do you even plan like contingency wise? Because you can carry 200 pounds worth of stuff and still not have everything if you what if yourself all the way through it. For people that are doing that kind of thing, like how do you usually advise folks? Like, here's some baseline stuff, or is it like, what does that even look like?
Okay, so if we're talking about someone who wants to go into the backcountry and they want to sustain themselves in cold weather, I would say, number one, you do not need mosquito netting. You do not need multiple walls. What is more important is a quality sleeping bag. You can get by with a 10 by 10 tarp, And there's multiple tarp configurations that you can use, but probably the easiest one and the one that works really well in the wintertime is what's called the Ranger Diamond, or sometimes referred to as the plow point, where you stake down, let's say it's a perfectly square tarp, like a 10 by 10. You stake down three corners and you put the fourth corner up the tr up a tree. That will shed snow like crazy. It blocks the wind like crazy, as long as you position it where, the opening is not facing the prevailing wind. And as long as you have a good sleeping pad and as long as you have a good sleeping bag, you can sleep very comfortably for quite some time. Now, the trick with extended time in the backcountry is you have to be able to air out your sleeping bag every single day. So if there is a moment where it's a bright sunny day, you need to be able to take your sleeping bag, put it out in the sun, and let the insulation inside dry out from the heat of the sun, or get it near the fire and, loft it near the fire, get it warm. Because I should say, every night that you're sleeping in that sleeping bag, you're imparting sweat in there and you're slowly degrading the insulation. So the trick for long term in the great outdoors is you have to dry out your kit, which is why so many of these companies are producing heated shelters that use like little titanium box stoves or stainless steel stoves. And the reason for that is you can now have a shelter that is 50 or 60 degrees and you can easily dry out your kit while you're like shoving little pieces of wood into the stove. So Kefaru is one of those companies. They're good friends of mine. I have a sawtooth shelter from them. If I have to spend a week plus in the woods, I'll set that thing up and it works great. From there, once you have your basic shelter addressed, I highly, highly recommend, obviously, carry your canteen, your metal cup, and whatnot, but a good wide bottom cooking pot. Because a wide bottom cooking pot will trap the heat or catch the heat better than a tall standing one. And you can use that as a water generator. So basically you're treating water the entire time that you're there. You can hang a bandana with a clump of snow in there over the fire and let it drip into it. You can make a what looks like a snow lollipop and let that drip into the pan. But you need to create some type of water generator because again, it's the constant battle of staying hydrated in the cold, right? So good shelter, good water generator, good wide bottom pot. Third item that you definitely need to carry is some type of axe. And I'm going with axe over a large knife or machete because an axe is meant to process large chunks of wood. And ideally, what you have is a combination of a saw and an axe because while the axe will cut the tree down, the saw is going to be more efficient for saving fuel. Not only your body's calories, but also there's more waste when you're chopping through a round of wood with an axe than there is a saw. A saw is going to leave a little pile of sawdust, whereas good quality wood that you could burn is going to end up in chips if you use an axe. So a big 24-inch, 36-inch saw, that's the workhorse of the winter camp. The axe will cut the trees down, the saw will process them. And then rounds will burn longer than halved wood or quartered wood, but the quartered wood is essential because it's dry. You're accessing the dry wood on the inside, creating more surface area that's going to burn faster and more efficiently. So I would say those are my top three recommendations for kit. Everything after there is just an extension of what you would carry normally. Like you want to carry a headlamp in the winter, especially since the nights are longer, but carry it inside your jacket where the batteries are going to stay warm, right? You want to carry a knife on you, but ideally you're not carrying a small pocket knife. You're carrying a fixed blade because you don't want to take your gloves off to reach that nail nick to open it. You just want to access the knife with gloves on. So it always becomes the question of, is this the best tool for the job? And if it's not the best tool, what is? So those are my top three recommendations for winter. Carry a good axe, a good saw, a wide bottom pot for creating water, and a good quality sleeping bag and a 10 by 10 tarp. You're not carrying a lot of weight with those. After that, it all comes down to creature comfort, like what food do you want to bring? And typically in the wintertime, you want a factor of about 21. And what I mean by that is 21 times your body weight in calories. So if you weigh 200 pounds, well, what is that? That's 4,200 calories at a minimum that you should be consuming. You basically want to eat as much as you can, good quality fat, which will burn long, and then mix that in with good carbohydrates, and you should be good to go.
That is Honestly, way less than I thought. There's gonna be like a huge long list. That is like less stuff than I was imagining. I don't, that's not that much, really. Like axes aren't that heavy, but that is right. Saws. I know there's a bunch of options out there and stuff. And then sleeping gear's actually pretty light for the most part. when you say it like a 10 by 10 tarp, are you just talking about like a blue one from a hardware store, like just something to literally create a shelter, or is there a more desirable, I guess, material? Those, I guess those things are cheap. They're kind of crappy. They're good for some things, right? But they're not ideal for a lot of stuff either.
Yeah, and when I say a 10 by 10 tarp, I mean it's the equivalent of me saying like, hey, get yourself a knife. You know, there are cheap knives at every gas station, and then there are quality
True.
ones, right? A 10 by 10 tarp, believe it or not, makes a great survival signal. So I do recommend people carry the cheap blue tarp in their vehicle because you can see that unnatural blue color from 10,000 feet in the sky because a lot of skydivers use them as drop zones. So they make a great a fantastic visual signal. And especially in the summertime when there's nothing that blue, everything is green, right? But the tarp that I would recommend is either like a 10 by 10 sil nylon tarp if you're really counting ounces, or getting yourself like a decent nylon tarp that is like a 90 denier nylon, like light fighter products or light fighter tactical. They make a 10 by 10 tarp that I use all the time. And you know, you can configure that, like I said, plow point. You can make it a diamond if you're hammock camping. You can set it up just as a living space area where you can process your wood and then sleep under a smaller shelter somewhere else. A 10 by 10 tarp goes a long way, but you just have to brace yourself for the prices that come with the luxury of, hey, I'm getting a tarp that's lightweight, or I'm getting a tarp that packs up a lot smaller. You know, you might be paying $100, $200, or even more, just because you're buying something quality. Much like you can't expect the person who's going to spend $5 on the gas station knife to go out and get, you know, the $500 Benchmade knife. You know, you're talking to the wrong audience there, you know.
Well, and it's always funny too when you get into those conversations, right, with people that want to go do stuff like that. Like you're going to go out into whatever the back country for a night, 2 nights, whatever. And you, well, but I don't want to spend a lot of money. Like, but you don't want to be miserable either. So, like, make the like, do you see where I'm going? Like, make this make sense, buddy. And people don't understand. And it's the same with a lot of stuff in the preparedness space, shooting, hunting, camping, all of that. You can do it on a budget. You're probably not gonna enjoy it. You know, one of the things that will always stick out to me is I went to like Walmart and bought one of those like bricks of like processed like food. It's like super calorie dense. It's super freaking hard. And remember when I opened that thing, I was like, I just took one look at it. It was like, you know, the most processed granola I've ever seen. I'm like, I'm not eating this. There's no way I'm putting this in my body. And I was like, all right, no, this is the, like, I started looking into other options. I'm like, you need a stove or some kind of like MRE or something. I'm not eating this. I don't even know how. Nope, not
Yeah,
doing
and there,
it.
and I know exactly what you're talking about. You're talking about most likely like the Datrex rounds or the Datrex rounds. Datrex is like an 800 calorie cookie that is very much like a shortbread cookie. I don't mind them. I love anything that's coconut, and they're loaded with Crisco. So like they're, I mean, if you need to eat them, they're not bad. But I will say that they sit in your stomach like a brick because they're meant to survive years on a life raft, and you're meant to drink them with water. Like you can also have like get severe constipation if you only eat those and you're not consuming water. But in the winter, like you have to think about the other food options that are out there that aren't going to freeze. So something that we used to do at the Wilderness Learning Center is we had a winter trail mix recipe. And typically, like when we think trail mix, we think good old raisins and peanuts, right? M&M's, peanuts, and raisins. Typical trail mix. To that, you can add whatever you want. The winter trail mix recipe was equal parts Cheerios, so Cheerios cereal. It was dark chocolate chips. It was cranberries, and it was butterscotch chocolate chip. I'm sorry, 5 parts butterscotch chocolate chips, and then it was also cashews or macadamia.
That
Now,
sounds good as shit. I would eat the hell out of that.
it's fantastic. It's fantastic. So it was, again, to recap, it was Cheerios, butterscotch chips, chocolate chips, cranberries, and macadamia or cashews. And the reason for macadamia or cashews is they had the highest fat content that was readily available. And if I remember correctly, I want to say it was about 400 calories for a half a cup. So you figure you could probably hold half a cup in your hand and chomp that down. And now you have 400 calories that's not going to freeze on you, that you could easily supplement your regular diet. And if you carried a large gallon Ziploc bag of that stuff into the backcountry, well, you've got a guaranteed calorie source, for the long haul. You can leave that in your vehicle, like right now, until temperatures rise that will melt the chocolate chips. So it's a great emergency food in your vehicle, as opposed to some of these bars, like you were saying, that have moisture content in them. So you go to bite them and you're going to break your teeth on them.
That was my first thought. I was like, how am I going to eat this thing? Absolutely not. No. And then that's
So
an
there's
even bigger problem. Like, 'cause then if you can't eat on top of everything else, you're in a bad situation.
right.
It was some kind of apple something. That's all I remember about it. And I was just it I was like, yeah, no, that's okay. I'll find something else. And it's funny because everything you just rattled off is stuff you can get at the grocery store. It's not like, I mean, it's not the cheapest necessarily. Chocolate chips and butterscotch chips are a little bit on the pricey side, depending on what you get, but really not that bad. And especially because you can make it in a large quantity.
Right. And one of the things to always consider is, there's a concept called universal tool criteria or universal weapon criteria. So, for example, okay, here's a pocket knife. Now, this pocket knife, how large is the blade? How much did it cost? Is it easily accessible, easily replaceable? Well, if it's a custom knife, it's not easily replaceable. That trail mix recipe that I gave you is easy to source in the field. So I could fly into Michigan, or when I go to the winter camping symposium later this year, I can go to a Walmart, I can go to any supermarket, and I can buy those basic ingredients and make my own trail mix, and it's super simple, as opposed to being kind of wrapped around the axle of, oh, I have to only eat this one type of food. You have to exhibit flexibility with your diet, or else you can't maintain it, and ask anyone who's in the fitness community, like, what diet are you on? Oh, I'm on paleo. Oh, I'm on caveman. Oh, I'm on the lioness diet. Oh, I'm on, the Whole30, right? That type of thing. Okay, now you're traveling. Oh, I hate traveling when I'm on a diet, so I have to order special food. It's like, just make your diet simple as much as possible. So everything that I just mentioned there, I guarantee anyone who's listening to this in the Northeast can find that. Down here in the Southeast could find it. Out in Utah could find it. And I know that because I've made it in all three of those regions. And that's really one of the points too, is like, if you're focused on something like that, you're going to miss the experience. So my whole idea is I want people to get out into the great outdoors and be comfortable, because I want them to appreciate the great outdoors. And you can't do that if you're constantly worried. You're going to miss things because you're preoccupied thinking about the worst.
Well, yeah, and I will honestly, I'll admit, I'll say that that was one of my fears or concerns, right, with like going out doing stuff in the woods and stuff. We're not like, hey, man, I don't really want to just eat MREs. Like, and I've had people tell me, like, oh man, no, there's some really good ones. I'm like, yeah, is it though? You know what I mean? Stuff like that. So, I mean, if you have something that's more approachable, that can help at least balance some of that stuff out. You're like, hey man, even if I hate this dinner, I can choke down half of it, and then I have at least some trail mix to balance it out. Something like, I feel like people get really wrapped up in some of the wrong things, kind of like what you were saying, right? So if you can put people at ease, it goes a long way to letting them spend that mental energy in other places.
And I got to bring something up, because you just said a buzzword, or I should say a triggering word, which is awesome. The word MRE. Now, I don't know if we spoke since I started helping my friend Jason Nauert with his outdoor channel TV show, Jason the Butcher. But
I
I've
think
been a regular.
the last time you were on, you had been filming stuff, but I don't think it had been released yet.
Okay, so his season one was successful. We're already filming for season two, and Jason just got greenlit for season three. So he's doing very well with his show on the Outdoor Channel. And obviously, Jason's background, who, if you ever want to have Jason on your show, I can make that happen. He's an awesome dude to talk to. And I want him to expand on what I'm about to tell you. The military just released, or I should say, an independent company just released, and I want to say that this was through like the whole RFK, like the Make America Healthy Again initiative, right? Just released all of the heavy metals and toxins that are in MREs. Like,
Oh, good.
it's really bad, like incredibly bad. And Jason, obviously, with his involvement with the military, is all about the food chain and how to butcher animals in the field, sustain deployments and whatnot. So Jason is ready to, blow the whistle on everything that he's seen. And he has guys in the military that are equally upset that the military was exposed to all this food that is actually terrible for you. Now, don't get me wrong, like we've all had MREs and probably in like the occasional, hey, I'm going on a weekend trip, all we have are MREs. That's fine to some degree. Some people would say zero tolerance. But imagine being a soldier who has had to subsist on MREs for weeks on end, months on end, whatever it may be. Now you're subjecting them to heavy metals, toxins, and whatnot. And I mean, they've got to come up with a better solution for food in the field, right? An army marches on its stomach, but what if that food in the stomach is actually dangerous for the army? It's just
Well,
foolish.
and even guys that will go out of their way to get it, like we went on a training class trip to Pennsylvania. I don't know if you've been to Ben Franklin Range out there.
No.
Fantastic facility. Went and did like a day and a half in the shoot house with Blake Flannery, and one of the guys, Josh, he was he's a army dude, so he likes his MREs or something. We're like, hey, we did this the last couple of years. We're gonna buy a bunch of lunch meat and bread and I think like mayo and mustard, whatever. Like we're just gonna bring all of that with us, or we'll make a ton of sandwiches in the morning and that way we'll have lunch. And he was like, oh no, I need dense calories to keep my spirits up. I'm just gonna eat MREs. And I was like, okay, dude, if you want to eat MREs, and he did. But I'm just like, I'm always amazed by people that are like, they'll turn down like, and I get it. Like grocery store lunch meat is not exactly the least processed food you're going to get, but like that's pretty decent quality food. And if you're worried about dense calories, like eat another sandwich, man. Like you just eat more if you're worried about it. And people will like, oh no, I'm gonna eat MREs 'cause I'm out training or doing whatever. And it's like, I don't know if that really adds to the experience in the way that people want it to sometimes. Like I would rather just be happy. Like you know what's gonna make me happy? A good sandwich. Like that's gonna make me
Oh,
feel
yeah.
happy. And then I'm gonna go, crush a Red Bull or a Monster, and then we're gonna go do more stuff. So I yeah, it's a weird thing. And I always felt weird about that stuff. People are like, no, it's fine. It's totally fine for you. It just looks gross. It's just made. I'm like, man, nothing designed with a 20-year shelf life is that good for you. They're just
Right,
unless it's honey.
right.
Unless it's honey.
Right. And don't get me wrong, there are foods that can last a long time, like you just mentioned. Honey is one of them. But that being said, I mean, everything in moderation, including moderation. Like I don't want to subsist only on emergency foods. And that's another thing that people get wrong. And I know we're not talking about like prepping, so to speak, for the long haul, but people will buy cases and cases of, say, like mountain house food or backpacking food. And then they see the labels and it's like 80% sodium intake in one meal. And now they're planning on living a long, healthy life, eating three meals a day of 80% sodium intake per meal. So they're getting what, 2.5 times the daily amount of sodium that they're required for weeks on end. Like, at some point, you need to look at the food you're eating and realize, like, okay, some of the food is emergency food, short term, right? You can get by eating Mountain House for a few weeks, right? I've done 3 weeks on only Mountain House in Alaska. I was fine. But I don't want to live the rest of my life only eating Mountain House. I want to get back to eating whole foods that have very few preservatives or no preservatives at all. So people need to realize, like, you should create a 30-day stockpile of emergency food. That makes sense. But after 30 days, start looking at what food can I put into my pantry that is more like normal food. And if you want to stretch this out even further, you may even want to look into seeds. Right, some of the heirloom seeds that are out there, so you can grow your own food eventually if you have the resources and the real estate to do that. But again, people are not applying basic common sense or logic to addressing these questions that when you step back and someone like me says, hey, this is what you should do, they're like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. It all comes down to looking at the basic fundamentals, right? Like, I'm not a genius when it comes to this. I just have more experience than the average person because I live it for what I do. But I just want people to make smart decisions and live a good life and appreciate the great outdoors when they're there. And you know, if that means getting through through a storm or you know, lasting through a pandemic so they can get back outside, so be it. But again, it all comes down to common sense, which isn't necessarily common.
And when we're talking about like food, if something, so here's a question, because I know I had Craig Caudill on, and Craig's fantastic. And I think he posted, I think you guys have something going on like soon.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow.
Yeah.
And we had talked a little bit about just out in general, like food sources, right, out in the wild. Like, he talked a bit about, and I actually thought it was really fascinating, like mushrooms, right, and like the different signs and how bad things can get if you eat the wrong one and everything. But so in the winter, obviously things are very different, right? A, everything's covered in snow, but plants aren't growing the same way. How does sourcing food really work in the cold? Like, I would imagine you have pretty slim choices in what you could source for food for the most part, but is that what's even available if you had to?
Okay, so wintertime, you can count out nuts and berries, right? Like everyone's like, oh, you know, I'm just gonna live in the woods off of nuts and berries. Well, berries are definitely gonna be gone. They're long gone. You may find nuts, but you probably won't. They've likely been squirreled away by squirrels. You know, who would have guessed? But that being said, if you can find a swamp, right? If you have access to a wetland or a swamp, there's likely cattail. And cattail is nicknamed the supermarket of the swamp. It is one of the greatest survival foods of all time because the
Really?
root system of cattail is pure starch. So if you can find cattail and you can break through the ice and get to the root system underwater, then you can access pure starch, pure carbohydrates. Now, the other thing that's very common, and it was actually considered an insult to the Adirondacks, Adirondack in the local native languages translated to bark eater. And you can survive off of eating the inner bark of a lot of plants. I'm sorry, a lot of trees. White pine being highly nutritious. Now, it's not going to taste great. And in fact, if you eat too much of it, it will constipate you. But you can also not only eat it, you can boil it and you can drink the juices from it. And you're going to get some of that, you know, plant material in the juice. And you're going to, you know, get some nutrition from it. You can have pine needle tea, which will give you vitamin C in the wintertime. There are certain plants that you can get. The do all end all, though, in the wintertime is animal fat. And if you can get animal fat in the wintertime, you're going to be very, very happy. Problem is that a lot of animals are burning that fat through the wintertime. Squirrel is very lean, rabbits are very lean, they're also very hard to access. Waterfowl, right? There are ducks that are still, you know, local to a lot of areas. You can get a lot of good fat out of duck. But again, you have to have the tools with you. You have to have some wherewithal, or you have to be pretty damn good with a throwing stick, right? Where you're throwing it sidearm and you're hoping to club the thing and then go up to it and finish it off. But the reality of that is, again, if it's a short-term survival scenario, food is highly overrated, whereas we don't put enough emphasis on staying warm and just utilizing the calories that we already have built up. It helps if you're used to fasting. Like, try going 12 hours without food and then try doing a 24-hour fast. Try doing a 72-hour water fast where you're only drinking water. You will be uncomfortable. There's no doubt about it. But eventually the hunger pangs go away and you realize your body can exist off of fat. And it's a great experiment. And obviously, if anyone's doing that, I would recommend speak to your doctor first to see if you're healthy enough to do it. But when you realize, like, okay, I've done a fast before. Suddenly, if food's off the table in the immediate timeline, you're like, whatever, it's just food. I can go without food. You know, like, but we are so used to, oh, I'm hungry. Oh, right. I need food. I'm just going to DoorDash something. We've gotten so damn lazy where we can DoorDash anything, like, as opposed to, hey, I'm hungry. I need to go run down something and kill it. You know, we've evolved to be this apex predator, and yet, we get in our minds, like, I don't have food. Oh my God, I'm gonna die. No, man, you don't think your ancestors ever went hungry? Like, it's okay. You're gonna get by 72 hours, which
You'll make
nine
it.
out of 10 emergencies are gonna be over in 72 hours.
Yeah, and it's a weird thing too, because I think people forget that we can survive that long. Like you can, like you said, it's gonna suck. You're not su it, it's not you're not supposed to do it, right? Like that, but that's the thing. Like that's how emergencies work. Yes, if things were, good, then yeah, you would be back home, or you would have packed some kind of food or something. But our bodies will last. And I think that certain level of pushing yourself to that kind of discomfort, like you said, like consult a doctor. It sounds miserable. I'll be honest with you, it's not something I'm going to go do. Like, if I don't have to, like, I'm just going to do nothing but water for 3 days. No, thank you. Like, don't whatever list menu. Don't put me down for that. I'm not doing that if I don't have to. I did have a buddy recommend that to like lose weight. I was like, no, I would rather just like clean up what I'm doing in the kitchen and take a little more time to do it. But thank you for the input. But yeah, as long as you have water, it should be good. And we talked about that. I mean, in terms of purification, if you run out, is there anything that like I know there's tons of companies out there that make kits and all the stuff you can do, but in terms of actually purifying it, because I think the assumption, and maybe it was this way decades ago, that snow, because it came from the sky, it was clean and you could melt it and drink it. I don't know if that's probably not true anymore.
Well, the thing with snow is it's mostly air, right? That's why you can make a snow shelter and be incredibly warm in there because air is a great insulator, right? Like the dead airspace. The
Yeah.
problem with snow is that you need so much of it to fill up. I mean, here's a Yeti tumbler. You would need probably 2 gallons of snow to fill up half of this cup because there's so much air in there, which is why that wide bottom pot, if you can keep a constant drip of snow, right? If you can dangle a bandana over a fire with snow inside of it and let it drip down like a water generator, that is your best bet because it takes no effort after you build it to just put a little bit of snow up there and just let it work for you as you're tending to other things in your camp. Wintertime water considerations, like I am a firm believer in the Grail water system, but people forget that the Grail and a lot of other filter bottles or pump filters, they usually will have like a carbon or a ceramic filter element, which can get damp. Now, it's supposed to get damp because it's passing water and particulates through it, but it's preventing all the stuff that shouldn't be there inside of it. The problem is that that filter can get so cold that it can crack the element when it freezes. So again, ice expands. And if it's inside that filter element, it might create a micro fracture that we can't even see with our eyes. But we go to pump water through it again, and now we're introducing untreated water into our system, and that will get us even sicker or put us in a worst case scenario. So if you do have a grail, the best place to carry it in the wintertime is inside your jacket, like on a string underneath your arm. So it's never, ever coming close to being, freezing. The wintertime, I'm a fan of boiling, right? And in theory, right? In theory, snow should be safe to consume if it hasn't hit anything, if it hasn't fallen off of a branch that an animal urinated on, that type of thing, if it's out in the middle of a field. But do we know what's in that snow? No. I would recommend if you can boil it, boil it. And there will be critics out there that'll say, oh, if you boil, you're going to lose water, right? Like you fill up a pot, you're going to lose so much of it. If you put a lid over anything you boil, you do not lose water as to the extent that people make it out to be. So it's like if you don't have a lid, you can always make one with some birch bark, right? You can even take a rock on a small cup and put a rock over the top of something and it'll work just fine, preventing the water from evaporating fast. But honestly, if you can boil, boil, right? And just bring water up to a rolling boil and you should be just fine.
No, I mean, it makes sense. I think that's probably one of the better pieces of advice, because I think people get really wound up in like, I'm just gonna buy the solution. Like, and not to throw shade, it's not anything bad. There's companies like Canna Provisions out there and stuff. Water purification is a really big deal, and I'm glad companies like that are out there to offer the convenient solutions. But I also know that most people, even though they should, probably don't carry stuff like that with them. Unless they are already used to spending all this time outside. And then, that's not who we're talking to. We're talking to the everybody else that needs to figure out how to survive through that, right? But boiling water is boiling water. I mean, you make a fire. As long as you have some kind of container that's heatable, you'll be okay. And you can do that. And then you'll hopefully, right, be able to make it through that. I was gonna say subsist. I don't know if that's the right word. But you're gonna be able to make it through that 36 hours, 48 hours, whatever it is, until you can get out and make it back to, civilization, hopefully. I don't think we've had anything that lasted quite that long this winter. I think most of our storms have been maybe a couple, maybe 2 days. I think the ice storm was about 2 days, and that was probably the worst. Yeah, and I think you said that. Like, most stuff is over in 72 hours. The aftermath will be there to deal with, but the storm itself will be usually done. I'm trying to think.
And if you think about it too, like there's also, I mean, just because the power out is out doesn't mean that the communication network is out. We had a blackout here in North Carolina the first year that I moved here in 2022. Some actors decided that they were going to shoot up a electrical substation, and it knocked out power for in some parts of Moore County for 5 days. But I mean, I lost power for two or three, and I felt like I was camping indoors. And again, winter in North Carolina is like the fall in New England. I'm like, it's 40 degrees and people are freaking out. But that being said, I was able to go on my phone and go on to like the Talk of Moore County Facebook page. And even though I didn't have Wi-Fi, I just used my data and I could still see people saying, hey, I'm over here, I'm running out of XYZ. And people said, I'll be right over. I've got extra. I've got a generator. Don't worry about me. You can have this. I got you. Like, I'm not saying we should put our faith in humanity, but I will say that we are not completely cut off even when the power goes off. And worst case scenario, right? You're put on a laundry list and you're triaged by local law enforcement, fire department, and so forth. But as long as you keep your basic gear charged up and you have some basic provisions on hand, you're going to make it through 72 hours just fine. Years ago, you would read through like the emergency manuals and people would say, fill up your bathtub with water, right? You can fill up your bathtub with water if you have a bathtub and you can manually flush your toilet. It's like, makes a lot of sense, right? Like little things like that. And honestly, one of the fun things you can do, and I will say it's fun, is you can have a blackout weekend with your family, right? Where you say, I'm going to go over and then we're going to turn off all the power in the house. Or we won't turn off the breaker, but like we're gonna turn everything down and we're gonna live like the frontier days, right? And if you have young kids, maybe they'll have a great time doing it because they can use it for homeschool education or whatever it may be. But like, what are the lessons to be learned by not relying on the light switch for power? Like where could we stage flashlights in the house? Well, how about right next to the light switches? So when you go for the light switch and it doesn't turn on, reach a little higher and there's a flashlight right there. Little things like that. It's like, oh my God, that's such, again, common sense, but you only learn that by doing. And the first time that you reach for your phone and the battery is dead, it's like, okay, well, could you have been charging it the whole time? And I always say, like, if your phone's on 80% power, why isn't it charging to 100? Unplug it at 100 if you want, but like, people need to adopt these basic practices. So when something bad happens, it's like, I've done that before. No big deal.
Well, and because it does happen, I mean, we had a in a lot of instances, power is usually 1 or 2 days. In the winter, it would really suck, right? It also kind of sucks in the summer if you can't run the AC, but again, stuff that we could deal with. But there are places in the country where it's not a couple of days. I know Northern Michigan, not the Upper Peninsula, but Northern Michigan. My buddy's family has a cabin up there, and they, because of the ice, and I think it was 2 years ago, the ice in a winter blizzard, it brought down power lines up there. And because of how remote everything is, it was like a month before they had stuff restored. People were driving an hour plus to get to a gas station that had power to run the pumps to fill gas cans to drive an hour plus back to be able to run their generators at their, like 700 square foot cabins just to, because that's where they live. Like they sold their home down here in Southeast Michigan. They live up there, and that's real. You know what I mean? Like you want to talk about worrying about pipes freezing and everything else in between and having to live that way. Yeah, it can be that bad. And it's, but it, again, I mean, to the point that you're making and we've talked about. Like, it's funny what you can kind of get used to at the same time. By the end of that month, people were probably like, you know, maybe I don't need the internet every day. Maybe I can survive without this. Hey, look how much weight I lost by having to go out and do stuff every day to keep the home running instead of just sitting on the internet or whatever. But it does happen.
Yeah, it's easy to always hit the easy button, you know. And earlier on, we were talking about companies that just sell like quick solutions. And don't get me wrong, like I will always go to a Bic lighter. You need a fire? I'm gonna pull out a Bic lighter. And people are like, why don't you want to rub sticks together? I can. I teach it. I don't want to do that, right? Like I get it. There are gonna be certain things like, if someone breaks into my house, I'm not gonna do the Hollywood thing and be like, I don't need a gun. I'm going hands on. I'm going to shoot you if you break into my house, right? Easy button. But I also know that there is benefit to doing it the hard way, because just like when you were a kid in math class, you wanted the calculator, but your teacher showed you your multiplications tables, right? And you can do things the analog method, but then there's the other method that you can earn. And never, ever, ever fall back on just, right? You should always back up gear with skills. And that's something that it's a hard sell, because skills take time, whereas gear, I can swipe my credit card and get it tomorrow, right? So I think it's finding that balance. And the only way that you can find that balance is by going out there and saying, yeah, you know what? I could carry that equipment out here to do XYZ in the field, but if I carry a few basic tools, well, now I'm not carrying all the weight of the equipment, but I'm going to invest my time into doing it the old-fashioned way, which is just as effective. It just takes a little bit longer, but the benefit is I'm not burdened by the weight or the bulk of all the gear that's needed to do it the first way.
Well, and even some of that stuff, like you can improvise your own gear. Like I was looking through the book that you had sent me over on some of the winter stuff, being able to improvise your own snowshoes, which I've never gotten to try and use. I always thought as a kid, I always thought they were tennis rackets. I never knew the difference, right? And you see this stuff now and it looks completely different, like plastics and artificial materials and everything. But I think there's a paragraph or two in there. Like, I think is it birch wood and something else? You can craft your own snowshoes. If you have to understand, I don't know, if you went into the depth on this part, but like, obviously your body weight relative to how much surface area you're trying to displace or like there's actually pretty cool stuff you can do as long as you have the tools and the skills, right, to build the solution you need.
Right. And there are some really fancy traditional, like rawhide and ash snowshoes that are gorgeous. That's not an emergency snowshoe. Like the emergency snowshoes that we used to teach on the winter survival class were simply evergreen boughs that you would bind in the front, and then you would put a platform over the center and you stand on evergreen boughs. And these long evergreen boughs that basically look like, giant skis, that's going to keep you from falling in. Now there are, depending on where you travel in the country, different style snowshoes that were traditional, but you may not have the equipment to make those snowshoes because you don't necessarily have a draw knife, right? You may not have access to rawhide. You may not have access to, the fancy, leather buckles and whatnot. But even with basic 550 paracord and a Swiss Army knife, I can make a pair of snowshoes. Because I can saw through those evergreen boughs, I can lash them together with the 550 cord, I can create a platform to stand on. Like, and don't get me wrong, they don't last forever. They're not perfect. It's an emergency method, but it's way better than fence posting, where you take a step into the snow and you sink down to your crotch. It's like you keep doing that and you're going to burn calories. You could injure yourself, because you might slip down onto something where your leg gets caught, or it might scratch the inside of your leg and now you're bleeding. So like it, people don't understand that some of the improvised gear, it takes time. It's not perfect, but it's better than not having anything at all, And if we always say, and it's the old expression, the more you know, the less you carry.
That's a good one. You should put on a bumper sticker. That'd be great.
That's almost like the Forrest Gump scene where it's like, well, oh, you just stepped in a big pile of, right? And Forrest Gump is like, it happens. And some year later, that guy made a bumper sticker, made a lot of money.
I do remember that part now. How do you know how big to make the I'm just curious because I'm like 250 pounds, right? But I'm
Yeah.
like, how do I know how big to make my snowshoes? Because I'm not saying that you're wrong, okay? I'm just saying
Yeah.
that I've never seen it work. So like, I'm so skeptical about actually being able to walk on top of snow as big as I am.
Yeah. So how do you know? Well, number one, look at modern snowshoes, right? Modern snowshoes can be 36 inches, 24 inches, 28, and so forth. And there are charts that will tell you like how large you are compared to the snowshoes that you have to use. Now, there are snowshoes that are meant for like severe mountaineering, and they're very tiny with like heavy crampons in them. But if you look at like your basic walking snowshoes, the ones I have are from Atlas, and I want to say they're 32 or 36 inches. And with clothing on and everything like that, I'm like 220, 230 with winter clothing on, and I don't sink in. But they're standing, you know, up to my waist level when I put them by my side. Now, the only way to know is by trying, and you can make them wider. At some point, the wider you are, it's going to be awkward to walk because now you're walking kind of, you know,
Bow-legged.
waddling instead of walking, right? And that's where the length comes in, right? And when you're talking about the tennis rackets, that's a very distinct type of like oval style snowshoe, which that wasn't very common in the woods. That was common in open terrain. Right. So the longer ones, right, the longer ones are great because they can make it through the trees, right, a little bit easier. But you learn by doing, right? And you make one and it's like, damn it, this thing didn't work. Well, I'm going to make another. And the good thing is that, you know, you just cut them a little bit longer next time, right? There's a guy, he's a primitive skills practitioner. His name is Ryan Gill. Ryan Gill is probably the foremost expert on primitive bows. And if you were to ask him, like, hey, how did you learn how to make the bows like that? Who taught you? What books did you read? He taught himself, and he learned by failing multiple times because we know that failing is just learning, right? So, same thing with snowshoes, right? Try them. If they fail, guess what? You learn something. You got to make them longer next time. For me, if I'm making primitive snowshoes, they're coming up to like nipple height because I know they're not as efficient as modern snowshoes. But that being said, I know, like, okay, it will work better than me again stepping into the snow, having snow go into my feet, right? Like through the top of my boot. Like I will do something rather than nothing at all.
And man, it's just it, you know, when you talk about stuff like that, it is wild. Like the stuff that we can actually do for ourselves. And it used to be pretty common practice, right? At some point in time, it was a common practice and a common skill. Now we can't do like, I mean, people can, right? But as a culture, we're just borderline helpless in so many ways where people
Right,
have lost
right.
those skills and stuff. And if you were to bust that out, you know, to your friends or something on a camping trip, so even now people would be like, surrounded by people, I mean, that spend time outdoors, you'd probably blow everyone's mind. Like, look, I know how to do this. I'm gonna make snowshoes. We're gonna be fine. Yeah, that's the kind of stuff. Maybe I should reach out to him because that's just wild. Like just the improvisation and understanding, you know, like all of that. It's like a lost art form. I think it's cool
Yeah.
as hell, but I probably couldn't do any of it myself, to be honest with you. But that's it goes to show like we know this because somebody else figured it out. The knowledge is available in a lot of cases, either free on the internet or through like the low cost. Like I know you have several books. Books are not that expensive, guys. At least most aren't anyways. So like it's out there. We can do these things. You just have to go look for it.
Yeah, and I always encourage people if they have my book and they like my book, I say one of the greatest things you can do for me is buy a second copy and donate it to your local library for distribution, for circulation, right? Because I want the knowledge that's out there to be free and accessible for people. Even if they can't afford a book, they can afford a library card, right? And go read my book. You know, that's the one of the greatest things. I've received messages over the years, people saying, "Hey, I'm going to my local library. Here's the reference number. They can find it here. They can find it here." And it's cool because, again, when I was a kid, I would go to the library and I'd go and look up old books, right? And when I travel, like I was in Missoula a few years ago, I went to the Missoula library and I was reading old trappers books in that library. I'm like, I wonder who the last person was that looked up this book. Like it's so awesome. Like, and to your point, improvisation, and something that just popped in my head. Years ago, there was that famous movie, famous book, famous movie, famous incident in the Andes where the plane crash stranded the rugby team and they ended up
Yep.
eating each other, right?
Well.
Well, they use seat cushions as snowshoes. So you think about it, like you're just spreading out your body weight over a larger surface area, and they had plenty of seat cushions. So again, like necessity is the mother of all invention. And I love the idea of teaching people how to be resourceful when you have limited resources. It's modern MacGyverism, and it's never out of style.
Yeah, which is a great TV show, and I'm not talking about the remake that CBS did with that kid. Like, people should go back and watch the
Right.
original. It that was honestly the stuff my parents used to let me sit down like during the day, like summer, no school, sit down trying reruns of MacGyver and the A Team, which also had a lot of ingenuity, albeit in different ways. But
Right,
they
right.
never had problems with that. I was like, this is the way America should. This is the way America should be again. Yeah, we need Richard Dean Anderson, chewing gum, and a paperclip, and there you go. Like, solve all your problems right there.
Amen to that one.
Yeah, but Kevin, I really appreciate the time, the knowledge. Like, it's hopefully we're at the end of winter, and this will be helpful for people preparing for next winter. Because, damn it, I am ready to be warm again. Where can people get a hold of you? I know we said it on the last discussion, but I know you got some projects going on. I think you mentioned the TV show and stuff, but where can people find your information, find you, get in touch?
Yeah, sure thing. So you can go to my website, kevinestella.com. That's where I'm going to have my training schedule under the 2026 calendar. You can find some of the classes that I'm running on Fieldcraft Survival's website under training. You can actually sign up for my land navigation classes right there.
Nice.
I write regularly for Safariland. So if you're interested in reading my articles, you can go to the Safariland website, go under the Cadre Dispatch blog, and I think I have like 25 or 26 articles there as of right now. But you can just Google my name, and there's going to be plenty of content for you to kind of dive through and disseminate, to people that you want to train with. But also people can just reach out to me, right? Kevin Estella LLC at gmail.com, and I respond to every single email. And hopefully I'll see people in classes, and you'll tune into some of the TV shows that I'm doing, and maybe purchase some gear along the way. So I'm sure I'll cross paths with some of the listeners after this one for sure.
Yeah. Well, good stuff, man. Like I said, I really, really appreciate it. It's always great being able to get you on the pod here and have the conversations. And hopefully we do this again soon. And stay safe out there, sir.
Yeah, likewise. Take care.
Hopefully that whole discussion, that information, hopefully all of that is helpful for you guys, and hopefully, for the future. My sincere plan and hope, I don't want to keep using the word hope, it's getting weird, is that we're through the worst of the winter. I know when I was talking with Kevin, before we hit record, he was sharing with me that he has family in Connecticut, where he's originally from, right? Up in, New England and whatnot, that they got like 16 to 20 inches of snow. And I had originally, when he sent me that yesterday in a message, I thought that was like accumulation over the last several days. No, that was total snowfall. And this late in the year, I mean, I know it's the end of February, but usually things are starting to slow down a little bit in the weather realm. I know we've gotten snow out into April before, but certainly I think after the winter we've had, everyone's ready for it to be over. But the information that we went through here, this is all really very important, very valuable stuff. And I don't think that too much of what we got into is so far out there in the survival or survivalist sphere. Because I know some people get very weird when we start getting into survivalist, living off the grid, extended stay type things. But a lot of what Kevin was able to talk about with how to collect water, how to build improvised shelters and stuff. I mean, the snowshoes thing, I just thought that was just really cool. But the layers and the clothing, like simple stuff, that those decisions and choices, right, can go such a long way in making you safer, and then also more capable, right? Because the better off you are, the healthier you're able to keep yourself in the most austere of environments, right? So obviously the very extreme cold weather with lots of snowfall, blizzarding ice, extreme low temperatures that usually go with those things, right? If you can still function, you know, if you need to, you can fight. If you need to, you can travel, you can move, you can do what you need to do to either get back to your family or to get to safe shelter, get out of that environment, or even just maintain the shelter that you've put together and stay safe until that all passes and you're able to get out. I mean, as unideal as living out of your vehicle for a day or 12 hours or something might be in the case of a blizzard where you pull off to the side of the road, it's better than crashing your vehicle and losing your life or some of the alternatives that could go with such a scenario, right? And we talked about a lot of that stuff. The muffler meat thing I thought was just hilarious, because honestly, it sounds like, hey, we ran over a possum. Like, okay, cool. Well, gut it and throw it over the muffler. We'll have it for dinner, you know, that kind of thing. But I mean, all jokes aside, like, yes, your engine block, the heat generated there, it's a great source of warmth. So yeah, you can use it to melt snow. You can use it to melt frozen, you know, ice in a water container or receptacle, right? And just, you know, so much more, right? I love having Kevin on. I loved listening to Kevin when he was doing the Fieldcraft Survival podcast back in the day. He's written a couple books, and honestly, you guys, the one he just wrote, it's called Beyond the Field. I'm going to include the link in the description, but if you guys are looking for access, not just this, but like genuinely good information for sustainment, for preparedness, you know, go pick up the book. Like, books are not that expensive, and you'd be supporting somebody like Kevin who's out here giving out the information. You know what I mean? He's sharing this stuff. This podcast doesn't cost anything, right? And I don't make anything off, and I'm not making money on the back end either, guys. He's out here doing this because he wants people to get off the grid, right? And get out into the woods and enjoy nature, you know, for the love of nature, right? So doing it for the right reasons. And if you guys, you know, want to support Kevin, want to get a copy of this stuff and a whole lot more, you know, and I can guarantee you everything that we talked about for the most part in today's, or in our discussion here, is in the book. And that is one chapter in the book. It's chapter 4, and it covers most of this stuff. So he sent it over to me so I could look through it before our discussion, which is really, really generous of him. I'm going to look at getting a copy. As soon as I can find it on Amazon, I will embed that link in the show description. And if you guys want to pick one up, it'd be supporting a great dude who's out there doing this stuff for the right reasons. Very, very intelligent person. If you can write about stuff at length like this, that's not just something that you know, like that's stuff that you like, you know, that's something that you do all the time. You have this knowledge in your mind. You have these skills built into you because you've learned them, you've practiced them, you've honed them, you've refined them, right? And now Kevin teaches, right? I think actually I think last time we talked, and we didn't get to touch on it here in this discussion, but he was working with Obsidian Spear Group doing some shotgun stuff. I actually have a buddy who's in law enforcement down in the Dallas area who's going to be taking an Obsidian Spear Group class. And it, you know, as soon as he voice messaged me and said that, I was like, oh, hey, you know what? Actually, the gentleman that I'm sitting down and interviewing for the podcast is, you know, he works with them doing shotgun stuff. So, you know, just one of those weird things you run into from time to time and realize all over again how small the world is. But I digress. I do hope that this was an entertaining and educational discussion for you guys. It's always the aim, always the goal to bring more Mobetta and bring better information to you all in the spirit of preparedness. I know we talk an awful lot about defending your life, and I think in the times that we're living in around the country, that's probably one of the most important things we can talk about. But yes, having the skills to sustain yourself and your family are just as important, if not more so. And we're gonna have a couple guests on in the, you know, in the future, and try and be more inclusive and more eclectic in the scope. Just get away from some of the tactical stuff and a little bit more in the preparedness side of things. I genuinely want to have more of those discussions. So there's a couple people that I have in mind for this. I think you guys are really, really gonna dig some of it. So more to come in the next several weeks, the next couple months here as we roll into 2026, particularly the spring. I know I have a private class coming up here. We're actually, and I might do a separate episode on this, I don't know. We set up a 8-man private course here in Southeast Michigan with Christian of Core Vision Training. And if you guys are familiar with Core Vision, they were in some of the Dirty Civilian stuff early on. Kyle, the founder, the owner of the company was. Kyle's been on this podcast, I think it was probably 3 years ago at this point. Maybe a little bit longer than 3 years, actually. But got a class set up here at Battlefield CQB in Westland, Michigan, where we train on the regular, and looking forward to that at the turn of the month. That's going to be a really, really good one. And then as we head into 2026, going to try and max out the time and the resources I have. So there's a couple of classes I'm looking to get into for like handgun and stuff. Might mix in a trip or two over the summer months. And then I know I got a very important wedding to attend this fall. And then before we know it, you know, I try not to look that far ahead, because before we know it, right, we'll be back into holiday season. And then it'll be, you know, hey, let's go plan for SHOT Show all over again. And everything just repeats itself. So, but thank you guys so much for hanging out and checking out this week's episode. That's all I have for you this time. You guys stay warm out there, stay safe, and like we always say here, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.